Content warning. This book contains some content that may be distressing to readers and listeners, including suicide and violence. Chapter 1. Monday, September 24th. Bayview High School, near San Diego, California.
Bronwyn Rojas, 2:55 p.m. I'm looking at my phone when I hear a voice. "That's old news, Bronwyn," says Simon Kelleher. "Wait till you see my next post." I hate it when anyone finds me reading about that, Simon's horrible gossip app, and certainly when it's Simon himself. I set off down the corridor, and he walks beside me. "Whose lives are you ruining next, Simon?" I ask him. "If all these Bayview High students didn't cheat and lie, I wouldn't have anything to write. Anyway, where are you going? Are you going to do more great things?" I don't answer, but he's still with me when I get to Mr. Avery's science lab. He starts laughing as I push the door open. "Bronwyn Rojas is in detention." "It's a mistake," I say. Then I see who is in the room, and I'm surprised. Except about one person. Nate's been in trouble since fifth grade, which is probably the last time we spoke to each other. He's on probation at the moment for selling drugs. So, Nate isn't a surprise. But Cooper and Addie are. Cooper, the school's baseball star and most popular jock. And Addie, the pretty, blonde homecoming princess, are part of the same group of friends. Why are all of us here? "Mr. Avery," I say, "it wasn't my phone that you found in my bag." "So that happened to you too?" says Addie. "It wasn't my phone in my bag either."
"Same for me," says Cooper. "Did someone put phones in our bags?"
Nate just nods.
"Somebody tricked us," says Simon.
Addie and Cooper and I agree. Nate is silently balancing on the two back legs of his chair.
"Maybe it was somebody who spends a lot of time in detention," Simon says. "Somebody who thought it would be fun to trick some good students."
He's looking at Nate, who doesn't answer. But I can't believe Nate would do it. It would be too much like hard work.
"You know my rules, Miss Rojas," says Mr. Avery. "No phones in class. Now, you can all write 500 words on how technology is ruining American schools."
Cooper Clay, 3:05 p.m. After 5 minutes, my hand is hurting. I'm not used to writing with a pen. Simon is searching his backpack. "Where's my water bottle?" he says.
"No talking, Mr. Kelleher," says Mr. Avery.
"But my water bottle is missing, and I'm thirsty." Mr. Avery points toward the back of the room. "Get yourself a drink." Simon gets up, takes a cup from a pile near the sink, and fills it with water from the tap. He sits down again, holding the cup, and speaks to Nate.
"Hey, did you put those phones in our backpacks?"
Mr. Avery looks up.
"Why would I do that?" asks Nate.
Simon opens his mouth to answer, but suddenly we hear a loud crash. We all run to the window. In the parking lot, a red car and a gray one have crashed into each other. Mr. Avery looks annoyed.
"I'd better make sure no one was hurt. Miss Rojas, you look after things until I get back."
Simon follows Mr. Avery to the door, and I think he's going to leave too, but he turns and raises his cup to us as if he's saying, "Cheers." Then he speaks to Addie.
How are you going to spend your time now that homecoming is over? There's a lot of time between now and senior prom. Addie doesn't answer, because you are likely to find anything you say on about that. Simon acts like he doesn't care about anyone, but sometimes I wonder if that's true. He was voted onto junior prom court last spring, and he seemed happy about it. Maybe people voted for him because he had agreed to keep their secrets. What do you mean? I ask him. Well, you're all stereotypes from a teen movie, aren't you? He says. Addie's a homecoming princess. You're a jock, Cooper. Then he points at Bronwyn and Nate. You're smart. A brain, in fact. You're a criminal. What about you? Asks Bronwyn. I'm the storyteller who sees everything, Simon says. There's nobody like that in teen movies, Bronwyn says. But Bronwyn, replies Simon as he drinks the cup of water, this is real life. I wonder whether Simon is going to post something on his stupid app about Bronwyn. People get really hurt. My friend Luis and his girlfriend broke up because of it. What he posted was true, like it always is, but there's no need to tell everyone. And if I'm honest, I'm worried about what Simon could post about me. When Simon drops the cup and it falls to the floor, I think he's acting. But then he starts making awful noises. It's Nate who realizes what is going on. He kneels by Simon, saying, "He's having an allergic reaction. Have you got an EpiPen, Simon?" Simon nods wildly. Nate starts throwing things out of Simon's backpack. Bronwyn says, "I'm going to find a teacher and call for an ambulance." She runs out of the room. "Simon, where is it?" shouts Nate. But Simon can't talk. He's gasping for breath. Mr. Avery runs back into the room with some other teachers and Bronwyn. "We can't find his EpiPen," says Nate. Mr. Avery stares and looks really frightened for a moment. Then he says, "Cooper, get the EpiPens from the nurse's office." But I can't find any in the nurse's office. I can hear the ambulance getting closer, and when I get back to the lab, paramedics are already lifting Simon onto a stretcher, and one of them is pushing an EpiPen into him. "Can you come with us?" one of the paramedics says to Mr. Avery. He nods and follows the stretcher out of the room, leaving the four of us. I realize everything has happened in 15 minutes, but it feels like hours. Addie is crying. "Is he okay now?" she asks. "I don't think so," Nate says.
Addie Prentice, 3:25 p.m. I try to text Jake, but my hands are shaking too much, so I call him instead. "Baby?" he says, sounding surprised. "We always text each other." "Jake," is all I can say before I start crying again. Cooper puts his arm around my shoulders and takes the phone from me. He tells Jake about Simon and says we'll meet him outside. "Simon is allergic to peanuts, of course," someone says. "I suppose we should keep the cup," a teacher says, picking it up. Jake is outside, and I fall into his arms. Cooper explains more about what happened. "God, Addie," Jake says, "let's get you home." While he is driving me home, I say miserably to Jake, "I was the only one who was useless. Everybody was great, even Nate McCauley." Jake touches my arm. "Don't talk like that," he says.
It's not true. He only wants to see the best in me. If that ever changed, I don't know what I would do.
Nate McCauley, 4 p.m. When Bronwyn and I get to the parking lot, it's nearly empty. I've known her since we started school, and we don't spend time together, but I feel comfortable with her. I was supposed to get a ride, she says, but I can get you home, I say, nodding at my old motorcycle. On that, she says, no thanks. Okay, it's up to you, I reply. I don't want to go home yet, so I pull out a bottle of whiskey. I offer it to Bronwyn. Drink? I ask. Oh, great, she replies. You're going to drink that and then get on your bike. I don't actually drink much. I took the bottle away from my father this morning. But it's fun to annoy Bronwyn. I grin and start to put the bottle back in my pocket, but she holds out her hand for it, leans against a wall, and moves slowly down until she's sitting on the ground. She looks good. She drinks for a surprisingly long time, and I sit down next to her. We sit without talking. It's obvious from the way Bronwyn drinks the whiskey that she isn't used to it. Then she says, I'm sorry about your mom. My uncle died in a car accident at about the same time as her. I don't want to talk about my mother. My offer of a ride is still there, I say, standing up. Sure, she says. I help her to stand up. Where do you live? I ask. She lives in the rich part of town, of course. As I help Bronwyn off the bike at her huge old house, her phone rings. Hello? Yes, this is Bronwyn. Oh, God. Are you sure? Thanks for calling. Nate, she says. Simon's dead.